Previously on Two Jews and a Gay.
I had the distinct honor to attend my very first gay wedding.
Brian, was it your job to hold the door outside as the police were trying to raid it to stop it from happening?
Gordon, the sky's the limit in California when it comes to gay marriage. Everyone knows I love Jeremy. Fucking A, Jeremy. Like, you flip and you flop, and the person who last gets your ear is the person who carries the day with you.
Can I be honest? I'm actually shocked to hear that from you.
If we hold up for 5 minutes, you will tell us that you're not shocked and completely agree. We have a special guest, Matt Jacobs.
Her friends showed up late. I mean, one of them was like as big as me, so she was out. We left our fat friend with the fat girl.
Do you think it would be interesting to have the two Jews and a gay go on a group date together?
Like this new app that I'm obsessed with the past couple weeks.
Let's hear it.
Is it Grindr? Brian Martinson, along with Jeremy Katz.
Brian, is it weird that I'm very, very attracted to Anthony Weiner's wife, Huma?
Well, isn't she Jewish?
She's a Jew.
Then no, it's not unusual at all. And, of course, Spencer Yasmin.
I need to see a picture of her, Jeremy, right away. Let me be the official voice of this.
Just be careful when you Google Anthony Weiner wife pic. You don't know what you're going to get.
Oh! Oldest trick in the book.
So I'm pleased to say that we're all here today, given the technological challenges that one of the Jews had.
Not me! Not Spencer this time.
It's a pleasant surprise that we're all able to get together.
This is very a la episode 5 or 6, where I felt like every weekly rant was directed towards Derek and I's internet speed. So
yeah.
Jesus. We did a full circle.
The circle is now complete.
All we're missing is me playing Duran Duran on my iTouch. Oh, what the hell? So, I'll go get it real fast. I'll be right back. Play the music.
So it's been a few weeks since we got together last. Mm-hmm. And I understand from Jeremy that based on our previous episode's guest, mm-hmm. you have some news to report.
I do. And I have joined the dating app referred to as Tinder.
And has it paid dividends yet?
You know, it has. It essentially
well,
how it
first
started.
First of all, I want to define what dividends are for you.
Well, I'll get there. Because basically, I've been very against joining any kind of online dating.
I want to point out first, when we were discussing Grindr in earlier episodes, there was a straight equivalent called Blender. And mm-hmm. you told us in no uncertain terms that you do not trust yourself with an app like Blender because the sex would be far too easy.
That is correct. And I was actually – remember we were at a Dodger game and Brian had told me about Blender, Spencer, and I got really excited and I was getting ready to download it. But then I thought, you know, I really don't trust myself with that kind of power.
Can you explain Blender to me? I'm taking notes right now.
It's exactly what Grindr is except for straight people. On a guy's phone, it'll be local women within the area, and on a woman's phone, it'll be local guys within the area.
And are they just looking for a place, a destination? They're looking for a partner, of course, but are they looking for, does it also help them say, we'll meet at this destination?
No.
In theory.
Okay.
The destination is generally the genitals of the other.
But, I mean, it's a site devoted to people that just want to have sex, correct?
Well, for the most part, yeah.
You get out of it what you put into it. There are people, just like on Grindr, who use it to chat with local gays in the area. There are people who use Grindr to hook up.
Is there one of these sites for just really obnoxious Jewish people?
I have to imagine it's called J-Date.
Damn it. But there's no sex involved in that. For a long, long time.
So, Jeremy, tell us more about your Tinder experience.
Okay, well, so I was in New York recently, and, you know, I saw the ex-girlfriend. I was a little down. I'm not going to lie. But I was pretty bummed out. And I've been trying to get myself to go out on dates more. You know, I'm really putting the effort out there to go out with ladies on, you know, official dates. And, you know, some have worked out, some haven't worked out. And super fan of the podcast, Nick West, told me about this app called Tinder. And him and his friends pulled it out, and then they showed me what it is. And essentially what it is, it's a hot or not Facebook app. So you log in through Facebook. It pulls in a couple of your photos from your Facebook profile. You have, you know, 100 characters to write a little stupid profile by yourself. Most people have some cheesy quote. Some people have, you know, a tagline. Mine, obviously, is twojewsandagay.com.
Bullshit.
And,
liar.
You know, it sounded like a easy thing to join, and it also looked kind of fun, you know? Basically what happens is when you join, it pulls up photos of people, you know, 10 miles in your area. So I live in West Hollywood. It picks up people from as far as downtown to, let's say, Redondo Beach. And essentially what it does is it shows you a photo, and if I find them attractive, I swipe to the right, and if I find them ugly, I swipe to the left. Now, if I swipe to the right and they see my photo and they swipe me to the right, we can then chat.
Can I ask somebody, can I interrupt you real fast? Why do they even need a swipe to the left that you're ugly? Why can't it just be if you're interested, you swipe hot and then it picks it up? Why do they even need the you're not hot part? Why don't you just skip over that?
Well, you need something to move the photos along.
But that's what I'm saying is, why don't they just have an option of check if you think they're hot and then move on to the next picture if you don't?
I think the swipe
it's not meant for fat people.
So it's also very like
I can just see someone becoming a killer based on getting like 100 not hot, and then it's all over. And then it's all over, like, and then Anderson Cooper's reporting about this mass murderer who's like fugly looking that like went around killing people because he goes after the 100 people that said he was ugly.
Yeah.
Well, I think a far more interesting aspect of this is Jeremy is very, very sensitive about who takes him in which photos on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So what collection of Facebook photos is this drawing from?
So I'm sure this will shock the majority of our listeners that know me, but I actually chose three photos that are pretty goofy. So my theory, and listeners out there, my two cents, is if you're doing an online profile where basically people are just getting to know you through photos, you should never pick the best photos of you. You should pick good photos, but not your best photos, because that way when they see you, they can't be disappointed, Spencer. They'll look at you and say, that's a good-looking guy. Let's have sex.
I disagree with
you
that.
You mean it?
When I was speaking to also a super fan of the podcast, Joel, about his Grindr experience.
A lot of super fans.
I'm always one who recommends leading with your aces. Like, you want to go with your strongest suit, especially on an app like Grindr, where the goal is to intrigue them to the point, or the goal is for some, to intrigue them to the point that they want to meet up with you and have sex. Because basically, unless your pictures are so substantially better looking than you are in person, which is possible but fairly rare, that there's that big of a gulf between them. Once you get them into your room, you're going to have sex with them.
Yeah.
So you want to have your best pictures out there.
Okay. I agree with that theory for Grindr, where obviously a lot of that's, you know, based on how fit you are, your shirt's off. You know, Joel is I think, you know, you see half his penis in his photo, but you know, in an app
full
like
screen.
Exactly, in an app like Tinder, for me personally, and I've got some friends on OkCupid and other sites, I always tell them, listen, go for a shot. You don't want to look ugly, obviously, but it shouldn't be some glamour headshot that you have. You know, it should be a natural looking shot, because then if you do meet with them again, in theory, they will be pleasantly surprised.
Are you showing any skin in your pictures?
I'm not. I do have a photo with my mustache with Eric Katz, who's another super fan. A lot of super fans, people. A lot of super fans.
Allegedly.
That mustache is not a good look. If you're getting women responding to you with that mustache, they are, you know, hold on to them for dear life, because exactly. That is not a good look for you.
So I've been doing this, and, you know, when I do connect with someone, it's that awkward, you know, what do I say? So I always start off with, hey, how's it going? And then, you know, from there...
That's a Todd line. I'm sorry. Are you doing Todd's pickup lines now?
That is a Todd line. Thank you, Todd, for teaching me that.
How's it going? Okay, no G at the end of going, though, right?
Yeah, you're dropping the G.
No, okay, right. Good. Just writing this down. Interesting.
You got to drop the G and no question mark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for
clarifying. Well, how many dates have you been on now from Tinder?
So I've actually been on one. I have another date tomorrow night, and I've got a couple lined up in the next coming days.
Well, good for you. I applaud.
It's so ridiculous.
I applaud the effort to get out there.
What about that site? Why haven't you been on that site?
It's not so strictly hookup-ish. A site like Blender would be.
Well, I was going to ask, what about that Billy Madison site, or Happy Madison? Why haven't you joined that site yet?
Ashley Madison, that's for people looking for affairs.
Right, but why, they don't know that you, why don't you have
a but you're not looking for an affair. He's not, I mean, if he wants random casual sex, that's what Tinder's for.
I think there's something pretty hot about that, the concept of that site, you know.
Well, I'm sure Corey loves to hear that.
Go to commercial.
I really like the idea of people clandestinely meeting for to have an affair.
And Spencer, that site's typically for people that are, you know, very wealthy. So the minute they walk in my room and see the IKEA bed frame, you know, my
Say your wife threw you out for the night. That's
Jeremy,
all.
The cover's blown.
Your wife threw you out.
That's getting to the bed frame or getting to the bedroom to realize that, you know, your tastes are questionable.
But, you know, I went on the date, and the date went well. She was a nice girl. She looked like the photos, which is all you can hope for. But, you know, it's one of those weird things, because she asked me, like, oh, how'd you stumble upon my profile? And, you know, what am I supposed to say? Like, oh, I was taking a shit, and I saw your profile? So, you know,
how'd you stumble across my profile? Like, it's Tinder. Doesn't she know how it works? Like, you scrolled through until you saw her profile.
Exactly. You know what's
funny?
Is she
kind of an idiot? I mean, how does she not know that?
Well, she's on Tinder, Brian. So.
What do you think the ratio of nut jobs are on that site? You know what I mean? Like,
that's why I think I'm pretty successful when it comes to Tinder, is because 85% at least of the guys on there are probably these creepy guys that say, you know.
But I'm talking about the creepy girls. Like, I'm talking about the girls that are, like, looking to latch onto a guy. Like, I'm just wondering, like, you obviously haven't run into that yet, fortunately.
I did, Spencer.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it.
Very beautiful 28-year-old, look Latino.
Well, that's a first sign right there. No one very beautiful is probably on the site, right?
Exactly. I mean, luscious lips, flowing hair. So, you know, I did my typical Todd line. Hey, how's it going? Yeah. No G, no question mark. And the girl wrote back, hey, cutie. Good start, right?
Great start.
Oh, my God, yes.
And then they wrote, just so you know, I'm transgender, if you're into that kind of thing. So,
and the answer, audience, is he is.
Yeah, so I'm going to see a penis tomorrow. I'm very excited.
But how'd you end it?
She's transgender. Oh, okay. I have to remember. Is transgender, she still has the equipment? In transsexual, she got the equipment removed. So yeah, you will see a penis tomorrow.
Yeah. But the heart – so as you guys know, I obviously am a big fan of the
cock.
The sexting. The cock. So the hardest thing for me is really being – the hardest thing for me is being on this app and not being like, hey, what are you wearing? Like, I literally have to refrain myself if I'm talking to a girl at, like, midnight on this
you
app.
You tie your left hand behind your back.
Okay, here's the thing, though, Jeremy. If she's on at midnight, if she's on at midnight, I think you have to understand that she's also probably looking for a little, you know, sexually charged conversation. Nobody who's looking to meet someone for a drink is on Tinder at midnight. They're either looking to bone, or they're looking to virtually bone.
So I should ask them what they're wearing?
You should absolutely ask what they're wearing if it's past midnight.
Now, have you started to look at, for our Vegas trip, what type of clientele we're looking at for the Tinder?
Oh, well, I can't now, but the minute we land foot in
Nevada, then
it'll
allow you to?
Okay. Bump it up.
Now, remember, Saturday night, I don't think we've told the audience yet, after talking to... fan of the podcast, not super fan, but fan of the podcast, Matt, last week, he told us about grouper. We're intending to go on a grouper date, the two Jews and a gay.
I think it's going to be fantastic.
And we're looking for, so far we've been going through profiles, we're looking for a single slutty girl, for Jeremy, of course.
Check.
an engaged girl, just have a nice conversation with for me, and a somewhat shy, timid gay guy that just wants to get to know another guy for Brian.
But it's important that he's also in a relationship, because I am too.
True, true. So that's where our hope is. We found two groups of three, luckily, that are that group, two girls and a guy. But we're still making our way around to see if we're going to go with either one of those.
Still taking applications.
Yes.
Well, Jeremy, best of luck on your Tinder date / dates. And we look forward to hearing more about this in subsequent episodes.
And for the record, guys, every time I see a black girl, I'm swiping to the right. Every single one.
Oh, of course.
And I've yet to match up with one.
I wonder why. if you tell them your number one actress to have sex with is Kerry Washington, they're like, she's not dark enough, and they move on from you.
I match up with so many Asians, Spencer. Like, it's given me confidence to go hit on any Asian girl I see.
Yeah.
But why no love from the black girls?
Because Asians love. It says your full name, right, on it?
No, it just says Jeremy.
Oh, it does. I was gonna say Asians love Jews, so. But if they don't see the cats, they probably don't know you're Jewish. No. Go for it. Why not?
Why not?
Little Come stinky on. Asians. Come on now.
Come on. You can't. One look at Jeremy Katz, and you know he's Jewish. All right. It is a segment that Spencer and Jeremy are very passionate about, and they have coaxed and prodded me to bring this segment back. Evidently, something called SummerSlam is coming up, so they think it's a good opportunity to discuss this.
Yeah, I know where he's going with this. Keep going, keep going.
Yes.
I bring to you begrudgingly
another
classic discussion of the Wrestling Roundup.
It's not fake.
Yes!
The Wrestling Roundup with Spencer Yasmin and Jeremy Katz.
So there are three questions to this week's Wrestling Roundup. Question one. With the recent TV hit show Total Divas airing, should the WWE corporate brass consider mixing the main event feud of Goatface Daniel Bryan and the Doctor of Thugonomics John Cena with the real-life personas of dating the Bella Twins Nikki and Bella?
Spencer, they should not. It takes away from what's going to be a classic match.
I disagree. It's bringing more drama to the thing.
I'm sorry. We need to move on to question two. Question two. What do you expect the outcome to be of the heated rivalry between the Big Red Monster and the Devil's favorite demon, Kane, brother of The Undertaker, and son of Paul Bearer versus Bray Wyatt, leader of the cult group The Wyatt Family?
Well, I'm glad you asked this. I personally think the Wyatt Family is going to destroy Kane and have him join the group.
No.
Jeremy, what
Kane
do you think?
Kane will choke.
Jesus Christ, guys. Are you really talking about this for anything more than like 3 seconds? This is such a fucking waste of time. I can't believe that you're having me dedicate an ounce of breath to this.
Don't be so mean.
But finally, question three. Because I promised we'd go through three questions. Looking back over the past 30 years, really? You want me to go over the past 30 years? What faction would you like to see take on the members of the clique who were the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, Big Daddy Cool Diesel, Hunter Hurt Hemsley, Razor Raymond, and the 1-2-3 Kid?
Spencer, it's got to be the four.
I would say Evolution. You just can't have Hunter Hearst Helmsley in both factions. That's the problem.
Okay, guys, I'm sorry. This is quite honestly one of the stupidest segments we've ever done, and I'm including Spencer's talk about Todd. We gotta cut it off.
Hey, this is Sumi.
Sumi? Sumi!
No, Spencer, it's Sumi, and you're listening to Two Jews and a Gay.
And now, a Two Jews and a Gay original production. 32 teams, one goal in mind, except for the Jaguars, to win
the Super Bowl.
And with that in mind, you need a reason to care about the other 31 teams. We'll give you the Vegas over-under wins line, the payout, and whether you should hold or be bold. Part 1.
The Seattle Seahawks, over-under 10.5 wins. All right, boys, first up we have the Seattle Seahawks. The line is 10.5 wins. The over, minus 120, and the under is even. Brian, what do you think?
10.5 wins for Seattle, where I'm leaning towards taking the over on this. I think I can see, looking at their schedule, I see 11 wins. I'm a little hesitant, though, just because Percy Harvin is going to be out for an indeterminate amount of time. But I think they have enough weapons and enough talent and a fantastic defense and a division that has some weak teams. I think I'm going to take the over.
All right, Spencer, do you think Pete Carroll's Seahawks will win at least 11 games?
I do think Pete Carroll's Seahawks will win 11 games. I actually think they'll win 12 games. Looking at their schedule early on, you know, they their first four games sets up pretty nicely for them. They go at Carolina. They get the Niners at home. That's always a, you know, I think those two teams are bound for the next 3 to 4 years to split games. The key is, though, they got to take care of home field. If they win that game at home, they're off to a 2-0 start, and then they have Jacksonville at home. So they could very easily be 3-0 before they play the Texans on the road, where I think they might finally have their first stumble. But anytime you can go quarter by quarter in the season, 3-1, you're on pace then, obviously, to go 12-4. And that's kind of how I see their year playing out. I think they're going to be very tough to beat at home. So the key is for them, can they get a winning record or go 500 on the road? If they can do that, they're in good shape. Can't have any hiccups. They have to go 7-1 or 8-0 at home.
No, I agree with you on the on winning the home games. You know, on the road they play at Houston, at Indianapolis. You know, in order for them to win 12 games, they got to win both of those. I'm going to say they're not going to get over 10.5. I'm going to take the under on that. I like Seattle, but you know, I have more faith in the St. Louis Rams and the Arizona Cardinals. I think both those teams are improving, and you know, in order for them to get 12 wins, they got to win 3 of those. So I don't know if they're going to sweep the Rams. I don't know if they're going to sweep the Cardinals. So because of that, I'm taking the under.
The Kansas City Chiefs, over, under, 7 wins.
All right, next up we have last year's worst team, the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Vegas has them at 7 wins. The over is even money. The under is minus 120. Spencer, what do you think about the Chiefs?
Okay. I did the review, and I actually have them at 9 wins, surprisingly. Going through their schedule, the division, I think they're going to definitely have their trouble with the Broncos. But if they can maybe get one of the two, I feel very good with them getting that over then. But it's not going to be a cakewalk. They start off the season at Jacksonville. When you're a bad team and you're playing another bad team, but you're a team that's on the verge of improving, you got to win those games, even if it's on the road. They have to win at Jacksonville. They play at Tennessee later on. They got to win that game. They play at Philly. I think that's another team not that good. We'll find out, but I'm low on the Eagles. They should win that game. Where they'll have trouble, they get the Giants. They get the Cowboys. Those are games that will definitely cough them up. I don't feel good about this team either way. This is one of those teams I'm staying away for in a bet. But if you're asking me straight up, do they get the 7? I think they do.
You know, I agree with you, Spencer. And for me, the reason I would take the over is, again, just based on the payouts. Even money, that's a great payout in Vegas. And I think we all, you know, can agree that the Chiefs are better than they were last year. And it's very doable for them to win, you know, 7 to 9 games. 9, yes, is on the higher side. But when you play the Oakland Raiders twice and when you play the San Diego Chargers twice, I'm sorry, Derek, those are very most likely easy wins. So if the Chiefs, you know, again, if the Chiefs can win those four games, they're going to get over 7 games. And again, because Vegas has even money, I say you got to take the over. B-Mart, do you agree with Spencer and I?
Yeah, actually, I'm almost going to bust out the lead pipe lock for taking the over here. I'm looking at this schedule. I see you know, the dumpster fire that's the AFC West, with the exception of Denver. I think they're going to sweep San Diego. I think they're going to sweep Oakland. And then they play Jacksonville, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Buffalo. I easily see this team getting to 8 wins. This is one bet that I would totally take.
Well, listeners, you heard it first. It's rare for all three of us to agree
on anything.
On taking the over. On anything, exactly. So get in your car right now, go to Vegas, $1,000 on the Chiefs. You're welcome.
And now it's time for my weekly rant. Derek, hit the music. Derek, where's my music?
Brian, there is no weekly rant this week from you. I'm very upset. Last week, you said that I'm a flip-flopper, that I have no opinions. I'm here to prove to you that I do have an opinion, that I'm not a flip-flopper. Derek, hit the real music. Brian, let me talk. All right, fine, keep going. He's totally wrong, but I can see his point. Internet isn't slow, but how much would it cost to get faster internet? Are you kidding me? That makes sense. Spencer, Brian, you guys are both wrong, and you're both right.
I got an original screenplay for you. The Legend of Spidey.
I am so sick and tired, boys, of Hollywood only making remakes. I mean, this summer, every single film was a remake of a classic. I mean, they make a remake of Total Recall? What, they put Colin Farrell in Arnold Schwarzenegger's role? Are you kidding me? Every movie's a remake. You know how many unemployed screenwriters there are in Hollywood who have all these original ideas? I mean, when's the last time you saw a good remake? I mean, yeah, True Grit was really good with Jeff Bridges, and Departed was actually phenomenal and won a couple of Oscars. I mean, those were some good remakes. I guess, yeah, I mean, if you can make a really good remake, then it's pretty awesome.
In and Stuck?
I don't know about you guys, but I am so fucking sick and tired of waiting on a 20-minute line for In-N-Out. I mean, the drive-through is insane. The cars go all the way around the building, all the way around the block. I mean, I'm literally sitting in traffic for a fast food. Fast food, guys. A hamburger and fries. It takes me 15 minutes to get it. Now, is that impressive? Yeah, it's pretty impressive, because, I mean, those lines are literally wrapped around the entire building. Anywhere else, it would probably take 45 minutes. You know, it's a pretty efficient way they run their business over there.
I'll take the wiener fully loaded.
So, as you guys all know, Anthony Weiner, politician, a few years ago, he sent a cock shot, and he got in a lot of trouble, and he stayed away from politics, and, you know, fair enough. And then, you know, he decides, enough time's gone by, and he runs for mayor of New York. And what does he do? He fucking sends another cock shot to another girl. He sends cock shots. I mean, this guy literally is running for mayor, and he thinks people of New York, are gonna vote for a guy who's sending cock shots at people. I mean, it makes no sense. He should really step away. I mean, do I personally feel that way? Probably not. I mean, it's a cock shot. Do I believe in what he feels as a politician? Yes, I think he's a phenomenal politician. I think he could have been a presidential candidate, and I think he'll be a great mayor of New York.
And now, a Two Jews and a Gay original production from the Vault. Each week, one movie previewed, its lead actor analyzed with heavy action and groundbreaking drama, out of this world science fiction, hilarious comedy, and spicy romance. Now, sit back, relax, and grab some popcorn for Summer Recap and Review. Starring the voice of the podcast and executive producer, me.
It is the middle of August, and the summer movie season is winding down, so we thought it'd be a great opportunity to bring our resident movie expert, Derek Green, onto the podcast to discuss the summer that was. Derek, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be back.
So, Derek, with the summer movie season ending, what was your highlight, favorite movie of the summer season?
Hard to pick. This has been an interesting summer season, to say the least. And I bet you guys didn't really know this, but we're about $4.1 billion in box office total. The record's 4.4, and that's 2011. So we're getting really close. And I find that hard to believe for what came out this season, which was a lot of sequels, especially the ones that made the most money. Number one, Iron Man 3. And for me, the movie that really shined the most in terms of what I was really excited about and what I wanted to see was Man of Steel. And I thought it delivered.
Go ahead.
Oh, Spencer, go ahead.
I was going to say, I disagree, actually. I saw that movie. I thought it was good the first when I saw it through. And then I kind of went back and thought about it. And I was like, that last hour really just drove me crazy because it was just like building after building of them fighting, just literally flying through building after building. And it just like – I like that it was a little bit darker than the typical Superman character. But I'm kind of surprised that that's your favorite movie. I mean, I don't think it was bad, but I definitely kind of – we alluded to this last week about how they're going the Batman route in the second one. I think they kind of noticed that a lot of people's perception on the movie – was not that great. So even though it made a lot of money, I think they were kind of concerned about going forward if it's going to do as well when the sequel came out.
I actually agree with Derek. I thought for me, the Man of Steel was the highlight of the summer. I'm a sucker for Superman in general, so I'm probably a little biased. But as far as that last hour goes, that's for me exactly what I want to see Superman doing. I want to see Superman kicking some ass and blowing shit up.
But look, but you didn't get like fatigue after a certain point in that. Like it just went on and on of them.
Spencer,
going through
I totally hear what you're saying, and there was a lot of CGI concrete being exploded and people flying through buildings.
And there's no people though.
The big complaint about the last film was not enough action, not enough Superman being Superman.
Yeah.
And that's probably the reason why you see an excess amount of it in this film. This movie did not, you know, wasn't perfect. It was not a Dark Knight. It was not a Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
Didn't have that level of maybe expertise and skill behind the camera, even though Zack Snyder really pulled through. But it was fun.
And
it was the Superman movie that everybody wanted to see.
And I actually...
Superman being Superman.
The first, like, hour and a half, I actually enjoyed kind of the backstory. Like, I enjoyed him not being Superman. Like, I enjoyed him working on the boat, and then the kind of the... When they're... I don't know if it was Antarctica or the North... I don't know where they were. Not the North Pole.
They're up in, like, Alaska or something.
Right, yeah, Alaska. So, I kind of enjoyed that. Like, I just kind of, like, enjoy him trying to figure himself out. Kind of like a la Batman Begins, you know. But then I feel like they just kind of rushed into it very quickly. Like, with the whole Russell Crowe coming back to talk to him. Like, here's your suit, you know. Suit up. It's just like – it's like I think they were really building towards something great. And it kind of had a letdown in my opinion. But it was good. But I'm
surprised.
Well,
let's take that movie and compare it to something like Iron Man. Mm-hmm. Where you had – probably your expectations met.
You're asking me?
Would you agree?
I would actually, and I know Brian's going to get to this next probably, but I think our next topic was going to be our biggest surprise of the summer, and I have two. One being Iron Man 3 being my biggest letdown of the summer, and The Hangover 3 actually being my biggest surprise of the summer. And I'll start with answering your question about Iron Man 3. I thought Iron Man 3 was almost disgraceful. It was just awful. Like, the first 45 minutes, I'm like, this is starting to look really cool. The whole the Mandarin character, I was like, in no way am I saying Osama bin Laden, that's great, but I liked the persona that they were going towards that type of terrorist villain. I mean,
right.
Ben Kingsley had a really creepiness edge to him that I was like, this was almost like Joker light from the Batman movies. It was so cool. And then for whatever...
Right. Spoiler alert.
Yes, spoiler...
Continue.
Yes. But for whatever reason, whatever idiot executive got in the head of the writer and the director and said, let's take that character and totally make him a British goofball. I mean, I was like so insulted as like a viewer. Like I could not give a shit after that point when you find out that Ben Kingsley is just an actor pretending to be a terrorist. And it just like, it was such a letdown. The whole thing with Guy Pearce, and I love Guy Pearce. I think he's a great actor, Memento. He's done some great movies, but like his whole character was so dumb. The whole backstory of like the villain is basically they have this power that they can't control, but yet he injects himself with that power. Like, why, if he can't control it, why would he inject himself with that power knowing that he could blow up at any point? It made no sense. It was a disgrace.
It kind of comes down to how Marvel makes their movies, kind of with that kind of fun edge to it, right? Not taking themselves too seriously, a little tongue-in-cheek. I feel like if this script was directed by someone like Zack Snyder, Chris Nolan, just thinking in like the Dark Knight universe, I think it probably would have played out a little better. You could have made it a little darker, a little less fun per se.
But why? But like the, do you think? Let me ask you. Your first, and Brian, this to you too. The first 45 minutes, were you like on your seat, like this is awesome, or like were you not impressed by like the whole Mandarin character?
Well, I, not knowing the backstory of the Mandarin character much, I was kind of willing to go along for the ride and see where it took me. I'll agree that I didn't really like the big reveal that he's essentially an actor that was playing a role. But for me, I really liked Iron Man 3, mainly because I really kind of geek out at Robert Downey Jr.'s interaction with Jarvis, the computer, the artificial intelligence. I love that stuff. I can't get enough of that stuff. It was featured heavily in this movie, so I was totally sold by it. So,
I agree.
Well, I mean,
yep, I agree.
You agree with what Brian said. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The part of the draw for me for Iron Man is all the tech stuff. That's okay. He gets in the suit and all that, that's part of the fun and sort of the spectacle of it. The story is sort of secondary.
Well, that's what I was about to get to. I understand what you're saying, but we're talking about the third movie of a trilogy. When you get to a third movie, it should be some form of storytelling. Otherwise, let me finish. Otherwise, you're just getting to the Fast and the Furious series where you're just going to make it for fun action, which it has a following. Don't get me wrong. But Iron Man, it's not just Iron Man trilogy. It's part of a bigger storyline. It's part of the Avengers. This movie is supposed to tell us something to continue the Marvel phase. This was a waste of 2 hours. They could have done something like, they just alluded to how what happened in the Avengers, he had nightmares. Like, they went into that for 1 minute. It was a waste of time, and they really started off the movie suggesting like he's giving up being Iron Man at the end of this movie, and it just it could have been something really special where like it goes to the Avengers 2, let's say, and they don't even have Iron Man as part of the team anymore because he's just like, something happened to him. You know, he snapped or whatever.
That, Spencer, that directly comes from the source material. Like, that's part of the comics.
And I also want to kind of make the case that just because it's the third movie doesn't make it a trilogy. And a trilogy, in my mind, has, like, a storyline that kind of overarchingly completes at the third movie. I don't sense that Iron Man really had this big overarching storyline that kind of connected it from the first movie to the third.
I agree. It was
Iron Man plus two sequels.
Right, but here's episodic. What I'm saying is, it didn't end the story. I get that, because obviously they're already talking about making a fourth one, I've read. But I'm saying it should continue the story. This did not continue the story in any way.
But it's the difference between a serial drama on TV now and an episodic drama. Yeah, there are a lot of TV shows now kind of are that, like, there's a big mystery sort of thing going on, and then there are your CSI Miamis out there that are just episodic, and there's nothing wrong, and there's nothing necessarily not entertaining about an episodic TV show, and there's nothing wrong with an episodic movie, and that's what Iron Man is. It's just kind of contained within that particular 2 hours.
I disagree, though. If you see the first Iron Man, I was so impressed by the first Iron Man. It was unique, it was fresh, and if they want to go that route as an episodic type adventure, that's fine. But to me, they're not taking advantage of great talented actors like they have when you have Robert Downey Jr. and the potential of Ben Kingsley as a very cool villain, and Guy Pearce, who could have been a great side villain in it. I just don't think you're maximizing.
Spencer, not to draw this out any longer, I think we can all agree that this film, they did something right. This was the highest grossing domestic film of the summer, $407 million. And continuing, I think it's still in theater somewhere, with the largest opening, $174 million. So they obviously did something right.
Yeah, that's not necessarily true, but we'll move on. There's a lot of idiots out there. That's all that means.
Stay tuned for part two of the Derek Summer Recap next episode. The Washington Redskins, over under 8 wins. All right, boys, next up we have a team that really overachieved last season, the Washington Redskins. Vegas has the line at 8 wins, the over minus 140, and the under minus 120. Spencer, what do you think?
I have them actually right at 8, so this is another one. I'm not in love with them. I think they start off the season actually pretty strong. They get some they have some crappy teams they're going to be playing off the bat early on that they can, I think, get a good seat. They can get their momentum going early in the season. They start off with Philly. They should win that game. But I'm not crazy about I think there's too much on RG3's plate going into year two. I'm not sure how good this defense is. I think the defense actually played above their expectations last year. I think with the rise of the Giants and Cowboys, who I feel much more confident in those two teams really being the leaders of that division, I think someone's going to have to follow in the back a little bit, and I think the Redskins will be that team.
You know, Spencer, I agree with you. It's a very difficult line. 8 wins is, you know, you're saying they're going to be 500. Do they have the talent to be 500? Yes. Will they be 500? It's very difficult to say. I would say I'm taking the over, again, just based on the talent they have. And, you know, not to really beat up on Derek's Chargers, but, again, they play the Chargers and they play the Raiders. Again, those are two easy wins. So with that, they play the Eagles and some other teams that aren't so great. I think they're going to get to 8 wins. Obviously, the question mark is RG3. Is he going to make a full season? I don't know. Brian, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to say I don't think RG3 is going to make a full season. And even if he does, I don't think he's going to be the dynamic player that he was last year for two reasons. One, he's coming back from an injury, and two, defenses will have time to review the tape on him and come up with schemes to stop him. I have a hard time seeing them get beyond 8 wins. I think 8 wins is doable, but I don't bet a push, so I'm going to skip this. And if anything, I'd probably take the under.
The Houston Texans, over, under 10 wins.
All right, next up we have the Houston Texans. Vegas has the Texans at 10 wins, with the over at minus 110 and the under at minus 110. B-Mart, will the Texans win at least 10 games?
Oh, that's tough. I see them at 10 or 11 wins. They're playing in a division that has Indianapolis, an up-and-coming team, but Tennessee and Jacksonville are not challenges in this division whatsoever. They have Oakland. It's hard for me to see. I would say yes. I think they're going to get to 11 wins total, so I would take the over on this, but it's something that I'm not very comfortable with. I'd probably stay away from this bet.
I'm going to agree with you, Brian. I'm going to do the over. Again, hesitant as you are, but when you've got Arian Foster and you've got their defense and Spencer's favorite defensive coach, Wade Phillips, you got a good chance. You got a good chance to win at least 10 games. And for that reason, I'm taking the over. Spencer?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people are going around saying, obviously, they feel pretty strongly the Texans were kind of a fraud last year. Like I said in a previous podcast, I think the Jets kind of exposed them on Monday Night Football. And that's why a lot of people are saying, you know, expect them to do worse this year. I look at their schedule, and it's such a cakewalk schedule for them that I got them at 12-4. I don't think they're a great team. I think they'll probably they might get to the AFC Championship, just because if they're at 12-4, they'll probably get a bye, and they can probably get to the AFC Championship that way as maybe the second seed. But they got a lot of things working for them this year. They're tough home games, for instance. They get the Broncos at home week 16. They get the Patriots at home. Those are key things when you're having to play your hardest games at home. That helps out. And then some of their road games at Arizona, a game they could definitely win. So I think, you know, like Brian, you mentioned with the Jaguars, the Titans, if they sweep those four, they get one of the two against the Colts. They're already got 5 right there. And, you know, I just look at the schedule and I say they got a lot of easy games they should be able to knock off with a superior defense. Still don't love Matt Schaub as the quarterback. Still don't love the head coach. But if you stick to the running attack and your defense pitches you a 13-point game, they should win close games.
I would agree with that.
And actually, this might be one I consider actually maybe putting a bet on, just because I think it's a team that could get out early in the season and rack up a lot of wins, so, and then have like a stumble late like they did last year.
All right, listeners, for the second time in a week, the boys all agree to take the over on Houston. Go to Vegas right now, put some money down, and enjoy those earnings with Spencer.
Please, please.
No episode of Two Jews in a Gate is complete without a little Dirty Talk Hollywood. Jeremy, take it away.
Spencer, first headline. boys, there is a new Hollywood feud.
Well, don't keep us in suspense. Who is it?
Well, don't get too excited, Brian, because unfortunately it's not the 80s. Action heavyweights Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis are no longer compadres.
Oh.
I know. It was confirmed by Sly Stallone on Twitter that Bruce will not be a part of Expendables 3. Now, apparently
what?
Stallone tweeted out, Willis out, Harrison Ford in. Great news. Been waiting for years to work with Harrison Ford. He then followed that up. I mean, innocent enough, right? Okay. But then he followed that up with greedy and lazy, .. a sure formula for career failure.
Well,
now, apparently what... Yeah, well, real quick, Brian. Apparently what caused the feud is Bruce Willis wanted $4 million per day on set, and I believe he was scheduled for 3 days on set. Stallone was only willing to offer... Bruce Willis apparently was only offered $2 million a day, Brian.
Well, I mean, that's just outrageous. It's Bruce Willis. I mean, come on.
Spencer, what are your thoughts?
What I'm confused a little about is the move to Harrison Ford, which, I mean, he's not... Well, he had some kind of action stuff in the past with, like, you know, the Tom Clancy stuff.
Air Force One. Come on, classic.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's not...
Blade Runner.
He's not the same kind of movie actor as these other washed-up would-be former, you know, action stars.
So, 6 days, seven nights.
It just seems a little weird that they would go with Harrison Ford. That he would go for it. Like, it just seems like a weird pairing.
Spencer?
I have a couple thoughts on this. So I'm glad you asked. You know, Bruce Willis, I think by now we all know he is a very difficult person to work with. I mean, there's really no hiding behind it. But that's, you know what? At the end of the day, that's part of what we love about Bruce Willis is, like, he doesn't give a fuck about anybody. He does his own thing, and he's a star. He was in probably, what, five movies last year? I mean, everyone keeps talking about how it's the year of The Rock. I see, like, Bruce Willis every 2 months comes out with a movie, and for the most part, the movies seem to do pretty well. It's funny on Sly Stallone's part. I mean, this whole movie is a joke as a whole, getting every actor all together. And I saw the first movie, and it was, like, dumb funny. It was fun. Like, they just, the bullets were blowing people up. It was, like, absurd, but it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
They made a second one. I haven't seen the second one. I think, Jeremy, you said you saw, you said Jean-Claude Van Damme was, like, the best part of the movie, but other than that, it wasn't that good. I thought you told me. But am I right or no? I mean, is that what you told me in a nutshell?
Never a good sign for a movie.
Right.
Although Time Cop was great.
Well, yeah. We're not, no one's arguing early Jean-Claude Van Damme. All I'm saying is Bruce Willis is the only... Out of all those stars he brought together, is the only star with power still going even in the 2000s. Out of all these actors, he's the one that still can lead a movie and be successful.
Uh-huh.
So while it is ridiculous that he asked for $4 million a day, it's Bruce Willis, and I don't think you need to go bash him on Twitter that he, you know, he's not playing ball and that he's lazy.
And more importantly, you fucking pay him. You back up the Brinks truck.
You do pay him.
And you pay him the $4 million. Mm.
Don't pay Arnold the money is what I would say. Like, Arnold doesn't – people don't like Arnold. That's the reality. Like, everything that happened with his wife, and he's not – you know, it's like his time has passed. Like, he's just not good anymore. Bruce Willis will always be around. I would love to see Bruce Morris as a villain in all these movies. Is he a villain, Jeremy? Can you even give me some light on that, what happened in the second one? I'm dying to know what happened in the second one.
Well, you know, it's him and Arnold cracking jokes at each other's expense. So.
Fantastic.
The Chinese love it.
But, I mean, Jeremy, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't
no,
you think
exactly.
Bruce Willis, like I saw an article, like, and I mean, this was actually a couple years ago, but I finally heard the clip about how Kevin Smith, you know, bashed Bruce Willis on the set of the movie Cop Out. It's like all these people are taking jabs at him, but it's like he is the one that's feeding all these people.
Yeah.
Does that movie Cop Out ever get made without Bruce Willis?
Of course not.
I'm sorry, Tracy Morgan, huge star. Continue.
Well, let me ask you this, guys. At the end of the day, are you more a Sylvester Stallone guy or a Bruce Willis guy? Because personally, I'm a Brucey guy.
Bruce.
I think longevity, I got to give it to Bruce. I've definitely enjoyed some Sly movies. I always thought Demolition Man was a cool movie. Never got to do. I remember that is the first movie I ever saw that came out in the movie theater and then 5 days later was out of the movie theater. That's the only movie I can ever recall, like, with such two big stars as him as Wesley Snipes. Who, isn't he in the new Expendables movie?
He's in there, out of jail, and right, he's back in business.
Out of jail, great. So I've always liked Sly Stallone more than Arnold Schwarzenegger, but by no question, I mean, no question about it, Bruce Willis, the longevity, you got to give it up to the guy.
Definitely. And, you know, I think to wrap this story up, you know, this was all over the blogs and the Hollywood sites. Well, that night, actually, Harrison Ford was on Jay Leno, and Jay asked him about, you know, joining the Expendables and if he was excited. And Harrison Ford followed that up by saying he has not seen any of the Expendable movies. He just signed the dotted line.
Was he? He was pretty high, though, to be fair.
Oh, of course,
It is Harrison Ford. Has anyone seen Paranoia? No, because that movie's out in the theaters, too, after 5 days.
That was the apparently the worst reviewed movie of the summer.
Oh. And had the worst and the weakest box office of 2013.
Yeah. Get Gary Oldman for the Expendables. I'd rather see him.
He was in Paranoia. How sad is that? He's too good of an actor to be in these movies.
Poor bastard.
All right, guys. Next headline. Now, here's an interesting movie tie-in. We all know that Anchorman 2 will be coming out this winter. To promote the release, Ron Burgundy is releasing his own autobiography titled Let Me Off at the Top, My Classy Life and Other Musings. Now, will this book be on your Hanukkah or Christmas list?
I'll start off. Probably not, just because I think Ron Burgundy, the character, you got to hear him. You know, you got to see it with his entourage. I don't know about reading a book if I'm going to really get the kicks out of it as I would as seeing him on screen. And I hope they're not overkilling the character. Anchorman's a classic. You see it once, you're like, good. You see it again and again and again, and you're like, it's amazing. It's great comedy. So I just hope they're not just on the merchandise bandwagon right now.
Do you normally read Spencer?
Next question.
All right, Brian, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think there are very few characters that can kind of go that route and actually exist as a, you know, almost like a meta character. Mm-hmm. Like Stephen Colbert, playing Stephen Colbert is one of those characters. I would like probably read one of his books of being like this arch conservative because he's, you know, he's playing off on that character really, really well and effectively. I don't think Ron Burgundy is a character that I need to read his autobiography in order to enjoy his movie. Uh-huh. And it kind of seems maybe a little too much of a ploy.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with you guys. Apparently it's going to be like a 300-page book, so I don't know who's writing that.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Come
All right,
on,
guys.
You don't need to do that.
We're going to wrap up Dirty Talk Hollywood with breaking news. Now, this literally just popped up through my sources. You know, I'm glad that we're going to reveal this live on the podcast. Apparently, a D-list Hollywood star has officially come out as gay.
I've already read this.
Well, don't spoil it for Spencer.
Come on, man.
Prison Break's Wentworth Miller has come out as being gay.
Who's that?
Oh, boy.
I thought
you were going to say Darren Young.
I was talking about Wentworth Miller like 4 days ago. We were talking about Prison Break, a friend of mine, and it's random that he comes out as gay days after that. It seems kind of unusual.
Is that the main star of Prison Break?
Exactly,
he was the main star. He was the one who had all the tattoos that was like the intricate map and like blueprints of the prison.
What about his brother Dominic? Isn't that his brother?
Yeah, his brother Dominic was the one he was.
I just remember him being a vampire
prison.
In some movie. Dominic. I think it was Blade, too. He was a vampire. He was a bad guy.
You know,
He's
if only
gay
you
too.
Could use that knowledge to, like, better the world, Spencer. I mean,
that's
only
all
you
know
that.
I don't know why I know that. It's so sad. Why did I even see Blade 2? It's a better question.
So, Brian, real quickly, do you give thumbs up or down for Wentworth Miller joining your team?
Well, he's not really joining my team. He's just revealing that he's
a
member
been a part
of the team. I mean, I think he's probably been an active member of the team for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I welcome him. I mean, he's a nice guy. I enjoyed him in Prison Break. I thought the whole premise of the show was ridiculous, but, you know, that's Fox. And I kind of enjoy those shows from time to time. But it did not surprise me that he came out. My honest reaction was, I thought you came out already. So,
Jeremy,
Jeremy, I thought you were going to tell the D-star was Darren Young from the WWE.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is actually huge news. I don't know, if Brian, if you heard this, but the first ever professional wrestler has come out as being gay.
I did hear that. And he randomly came out, like, at the airport.
Yeah.
And nobody was around either. One of the busiest airports in all the world, and nobody was around.
Exactly.
Baggage claim. Like that's got to be true.
And that's Dirty Talk Hollywood.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right, boys, it is time to wrap up this episode. I'm about to head off to Minneapolis to see the State Fair, Great Minnesota Get-Together. A little-known fact, it is the second most popular state fair based on population or based on attendance in the entire union. Just wanted to throw that out.
Spencer, thoughts?
Fascinating.
But, you know, Minnesota is not anywhere near the most populous state. So it's that much of a mecca for the other lesser states surrounding Minnesota that they just have to come to the state fair.
And you didn't get beat up in high school?
Did I get beat up in high school?
Yeah.
No, actually, I never even went to the state fair until after I left high school.
Well, there's some audio circulating about the true story of Brian in high school, so we'll see when that comes out.
Ooh,
it's in the works.
Well, you will not hear about it at my 20th reunion because I won't be going. So there.
God damn.
No desire. Reunion? No desire to go.
Well, they're just a bunch of. It's exceedingly lame. They're just having it at the exact same location that they had the 10-year reunion. And I get, like, on your 10-year reunion, you want to keep costs low because, you know, some people may still be in grad school.
What was the
starting
location?
Their careers. It was just at some bar in Shakopee. Like, ooh, wow, thanks. That sounds like a fantastic time.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, are we concerned that our 10-year high school reunion just happened now and he's talking about his 20-year reunion?
And he looks better than both of us.
Yeah. Absolutely, I do.
I completely disagree about that.
All right. On that note, though, for Spencer Yasbin and Jeremy Katz, I am Brian Martinson, and we will catch you next time.